Alrighty, it is day something or other in isolation. Not really isolation. It's not quarantine. Not doing normal things. Anyway, regardless, time to figure out stuff to do at home, which is one of the first things you'll notice here in the backdrop of this video. For those of you watching it, there's a whole bunch of networking gear I'm going to talk about in a moment. Other thing you'll notice is, based on popular feedback, I did shave and make myself more presentable. I think I just kind of went through a phase where it's like, why do I even bother? Anyway, I'm presentable today. Even wore jeans today, just because the weather has started to turn. 30 degrees here tomorrow, though. Not too bad for approaching the middle of autumn. All right, so what I'm going to do is I want to talk about all of the stuff I've got here before I start taking it out of boxes over the Easter long weekend and do another blog post about everything later on. And then I'm going to go outside, I'm going to sit down at the pool, and we're going to talk about all the other cyber things that are happening. Because I've actually got a heap of stuff this week. So I suspect between everything here in the pile and all the other things is going to be a bit of a long one. Now, just for context, if I pick the camera up for a second and we have a look at all the bits here, there are a lot of bits. Now, this is going to be V2 of my Ubiquiti home network. V1 dates back several years now and has been absolutely fantastic, if I'm honest, but combination of factors is leading me to do V2. In fact, you know what? I wasn't planning on doing this, but I will show you my personal shame, and this will explain part of why I need to do a V2 network. So if I go through my living room into my garage and we have a look at what is in my cupboard, brace yourself. Oh my God, look at that. So here is the patch panel. I'll talk about that in a moment. And here is just an absolutely massive, embarrassing spider's nest of cables. Now, it's functional, it's worked very well, but it is definitely time to grow up, which is why we're now doing V2 of the network. So, V1 was a whole bunch of Ubiquiti gear, which I moved to after I was having trouble with normal consumer-grade stuff. I just had terrible, terrible network connectivity. I wrote a blog post titled "How I Fixed My Dodgy Wi-Fi," and I think I spent about 2,200 Aussie dollars, which is actually not many American dollars these days because the AUD has dived in recent times. Good for me when I earn most of my money in America. Another story. Anywho. So, went and bought all the gear, found out it was fantastic, wrote about it. Loads of other people went, "Oh, this is fantastic too." Ubiquiti went, "Oh, this is fantastic too." So they sent me a bunch of stuff. And I've always been very transparent about what stuff do I get sent versus what stuff do I go and spend my own hard-earned on. And there are two things here that they have sent me and a bunch of stuff I've gone and spent money on. And I'll get to those in a moment. But what I really wanted to do is I wanted to take that absolute freaking mess that is in the garage there, and like, let's just be clear, just in case anyone's listening to this, it's like a listening, not watching. There's a big closet in there that has wine and whiskey and stuff like that, as well as a whole bunch of cables. So it's a fairly large space. Think about a, you know, small bathroom or something like that. So anyway, what I'd always wanted to do was take that mess and rack mount it, because I do have a bunch of different things that I want to be able to put in a rack, and I guess that it's always just been a nice idea as well. It's like, let's make everything neat and put it in something that feels a bit more professional. And I actually did a complete build at my brother's house with Ubiquiti in-wall units and a very small height rack. It must have only been about a 6RU or something like that. Obviously not as big as the one in the massive box just there I'm going to talk about in a moment. Haven't even opened it yet. I'm literally going to unbox the rack here. So Ubiquiti, amongst other things that they had sent me two things that are relevant to this now. Now, one of the things they've sent me is a Dream Machine Pro. Now, that is this one just here. So Dream Machine Pro, I wrote about the Dream Machine Non-Pro. Probably only a few weeks ago. I put it in my mate's house, my mate Raf, who makes the pizzas. I'm going to talk about pizzas and restaurants later on as well. So that was a really neat experience. So the Pro is the amalgamation of the security key, the secure, or the cloud key rather, the security gateway, a wireless access point, and a router. So it's all bundled into one. It's consumer looking, it's fancy, etc., etc. This is the rack mounted version of that, and of course it has a lot more power and other bits as well. So they did send me that one, and they also sent me their Gen 2 switch, and I've got a 24 port switch from memory here, 24 port PoE switch, which they've also sent me. And one of the neat things with the Gen 2 is it's actually got a little LED on the front, which is also the same as the security gateway, the Dream Machine. So many acronyms. As the UDM, getting back to the acronyms, and they'll sit there together, and they also do some like sort of cool AR stuff where you can sort of show your phone, or point your phone rather, at the ports on the front of the units, and they can tell you which devices are plugged into it just by overlaying that on the display. So they're the two main rack mounted things. Now, going in no particular order other than just what seems logical at the moment, I have also ordered a patch panel like this. Now, you will see this is what they call an unloaded patch panel, because it's got 24 sockets here, but it does not have any jacks. There are no RJ45s here, and there are no other side of RJ45 where you normally hardwire cables in straight from the wall. Now, interesting thing happened with this actually. So my original intention was to get a patch panel that was pass-through. So pass-through means that it has RJ45s, and just as a reminder for everybody what an RJ45 is, we've all seen network cables like that. So it would have an RJ45 socket on both the front and the back. The reason for this is that if you remember that filthy mess I just showed you in the closet there, there is a very sort of consumer grade patch panel sitting there on the wall. Now, in my perfect world, I would put the server cabinet down the other end, and I would get every single one of those 32 patched points there extended behind the wall, like literally have to rip out plaster, wire it around, plug it straight into the back of a normal patch panel, job done, we're good to go. That's what I was planning on doing, except we're sort of at a time now, I don't really want electricians and workmen and other people who are going to do plastering and things coming into the house. So what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to literally run Ethernet cables from that consumer grade patch panel you see there down to the back of the server cabinet into the back of the patch panel here. This means I need a pass through. So I need to be able to plug RJ45s into this side, and then when you look at the front of the rack, it will just look normal. It will look like a normal patch panel. And then later on, I can decide to redo the whole thing properly if I want. So I wanted pass-through. Now, I bought the original pass-through panel from a company called FS. Now, they've got a little logo here, fs.com. And they got back to me super fast and said, look, things are a bit delayed at the moment. It's going to be a couple of weeks until we have that pass-through available. Would you like to consider something different? So I went and found the unloaded panel, and I found 24 of these guys, which are snap-in Keystone units. Now, I'll actually open one of these up to show you. Like, this is literally the unboxing of everything today. And this is what the unit looks like just here. Put it so we can see it there. So I've got RJ45 that side and RJ45 that side, which means I'll be able to take a cable like this and go into one side like so, and a cable like this and going to the other side like so. So it literally just passes through. And because this is unloaded, has no plugs, I'll just go and slot 24 of these guys straight into the panel. So out the front, we'll have these short patch cables like this. And on the back will be these 4 meter long cables, which will go from the back of the patch panel. They'll be nicely sort of cable tied onto the strain relief, yeah, I forget what they call it. The little unit's just here to make sure that if I move the cabinet around, because this whole thing's on wheels, I don't accidentally pull the cables on this end and snap them off. So, patch panel, Dream Machine Pro, and of course the switch. So that's three rack units taken up already. Now, I inevitably have a whole bunch of other things that will have to sit on shelves. So this, when we open up in a moment, should have two shelves sitting in it. And the thing that's always got me, every time I've seen a server build, once there's stuff on shelves, you end up with cables like coming out of the front of the switch and they're just dangling messily at the front of the cabinet. So one of the things I bought here, and this was probably about the cheapest out of everything, is what's called a brush panel. So a brush panel looks like this. And through the middle of it, I get that, like literally like a brush, so that I can have cables, I'll put all those little hairs back that way, I can have cables that come out of the switch and then into the brush panel like that, so that everything looks very, very neat. And then they'll go down and they'll go down to the back of units which sit on the shelves. So that should keep everything looking super, super, super sweet. Now a few other things. I mentioned the 4 meter cables. I decided to get white ones because they'll come out of the wall where everything is white. And then just to go and mess up my theory about white things, I got a cord mesh concealer. So this is basically like a Velcro cord which you can wrap around, or Velcro mesh if you like, which you can wrap around a bunch of cords. In fact, I got one in the kitchen where I've got a whole bunch of cables coming off coffee machine and the grinder and the Sonos and all this sort of stuff. So this will help keep things neat. I just couldn't get it in white, so I'm wrapping the white cables I got in the black mesh. Who cares? I got a bunch of, what are these, probably about 40 centimeter Ethernet cables, because this will go to the units that will sit on shelves. I just realized I might have some that need to sit on lower shelves, so I might need some longer cables. And incidentally, I don't know if you've noticed, did I just lose one of my jacks? Oh, there it is. One of my keystones. These Ethernet cables, you might notice, are super, super thin. So they're much thinner than most cables. So hopefully this should help a little bit with airflow and things like that. They look kind of cool, I guess. Obviously, I sort of actually wondered, like, should I get them in red or orange or something cool like that? And then when I put the cabinet together, it will look super awesome. And then I went old school and just went blue. And then I will actually install a Philips Hue light strip as well. I've got a spare one sitting in my study, excess to needs, which I will wire in, and then it will have a nice blue glow in the cabinet. Another thing, there is a 6 terabyte hard disk here, Western Digital Red. So the WD Reds are made for things like NAS devices, where they're basically spinning 24/7, because that will go into the UDM Pro, such that the video cameras that Ubiquiti also sent me, not in pick here because I don't know where I'm going to put them yet, the video cameras will be able to record straight into this unit, and they'll be really, really nice, high def, high quality cameras. The problem is that they all require wired Ethernet, and none of the places that I actually want to put them are wired. So I'm going to have to figure out what I do with that. Anyway, moving on, let's have a look at what's in this cabinet, and I want to explain while I'm opening this why I have such a big cabinet, why I don't have a bigger cabinet, and some of the feedback I got. So first of all, this is from a company called 4 Cabling in Australia, and loads of people said they'd had very positive experiences with 4 Cabling, which so far has been consistent with my experiences as well. And there's a few reasons I went this size. So number one is that I don't know how much more stuff I'm going to want to put in there in the future. I'm yet to kind of work that out. Number two is, check this out, it's on wheels, right? So one of the things is, if you go a half height unit, so this is an 18 RU unit, then you get wheels. And once you have wheels, look at that, it's lifts straight off. Once you have wheels, you can move the thing around, which I may well actually want to do in that tight space. Now, I shared with people a whole sort of inventory of what I had planned to do, and I had a whole bunch of feedback about the cabinet, which ranged from, don't get a half-height cabinet, get a full-size cabinet, because otherwise later on you'll want to add more stuff and then you'll regret it. So, okay, well, I see the point, but I don't see me using more than 18 RUs. And then a bunch of people said, you don't need 18 RUs, get something smaller, you're spending more money than what you need to. So, okay, well, I see your point, but I'm okay making that sacrifice for now. The other thing is, this is a 600 mil deep cabinet, and a bunch of people said, you're never going to be able to fit servers in there. You know, it's fine for like networking equipment and obviously stuff that will sit on the shelves that we'll hopefully see in here in a moment, but it would be no good put a full-blown server. And I'm sort of thinking, well, I do have a lot of cloud. You know, like I just don't foresee a time where I need to have a server in my house. And I appreciate the irony of that as I open up a server cabinet, but of course, server cabinets don't just hold servers. But this is the joy of Twitter, right? Like, you ask a question, you're gonna get a bunch of replies. You need to disseminate from those which ones actually make sense and are relevant to you. And holy cow, I'm gonna talk about the amount of stuff you see on Twitter in a moment and how important it is that you make logical decisions. I've got to say, for cabling, this is exceptionally well wrapped. And the way I put it, actually had it back to front. So let's move all of that stuff forward. Turn it around. Ooh, this is nice. Look at that. I like this. This is really nicely built. There you go. Handle open. The door is earthed as well. It has built-in fan up the top, that's there. It should have a 6 power unit, or a 6 plug power unit back over here, which it does. It's got the two shelves. Actually, one thing I didn't mention, I did buy another power unit, because when I did the maths, I went, 6 is really not gonna last me anywhere near long enough. But this is a really, really nicely made looking unit. And these should pop off on the side. It's actually got some keys in here. Let's take the keys off. And then we should be able to pop off the sides. Let's have a look at this. What those keys are for. Okay, there. Pop off the side. Sides are also earthed. Just feels really nicely made. Like, I've played with a bunch of server cabinets before, but this is super cool. Actually, those keys are for the front. The little sort of star-shaped key there. Let's have a look around the back. See what's in there. And there's our power supply unit just there. This is really nice. I'm pretty happy about this, actually. This is cool. So, yeah, this is going to be my Easter long weekend project. You see why I love the wheels, right? Like, just being able to spin it around like this and do whatever I need to do, that's super cool. So there's gonna be a heap of room there to put what is ultimately, what I've got, 4 rack mounted units between the UDM Pro, the switch, the patch board, and the brush panel. So that'll take out 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe only just the top section there. And then on these shelves, I'll have plenty of room to put other units that need to sit there. And then I'll have to figure out if I need some longer cables in order to put some things on the lower shelf and spread everything out and make sure it all has lots of airflow and lots of room to move. Well, I'm super stoked about this. So that's all I wanted to show you in here. I'm gonna go outside because it's just a really nice time of year to be outside, and I left my beer outside. And then I'm gonna talk about the other things that are on my list. Now, while I'm doing that, one of the things that I do need to work out, and I don't yet have an answer to, I'm gonna sit us here next to the pool with the swan. One of the things I don't yet have an answer to is, how am I gonna migrate from the existing network to this one? So I've got the Unified Security Gateway, the existing cloud key, that's fine, they'll go. But then I've got everything from all the existing access points. So I've got a whole bunch of APs spread around the house. I've got all of the clients that are previously connected that I've given nice names to, that I've given logos to, so that my iPhone looks like an iPhone when I see it on the map. And I don't know how I'm gonna be able to take all of that and transfer it across to the UDM Pro. So if anyone has any answers on that, I'd love to know about it. I think tomorrow what I'll probably do, tomorrow being Saturday, is just literally physically install stuff in the cabinet in there in the living room, whilst I try and wait to see if anyone's got answers. I might put out a tweet about this, actually, and then we'll figure out the whole thing. So that is the one thing that I'm not too sure about yet. And then ultimately I'll just have a bunch of spare excess network gear I don't need anymore. But eventually it'll just be a really, really nice, slick setup with everything in that cabinet. All right, cheers. So, moving on to other things. This is just in my notes here. This is absolutely nothing to do with InfoSec or anything like that, but whilst we're sort of sitting around houses trying to figure out what on earth to do with ourselves, I made a Nerf gun wall with my son yesterday. So this was cool. It was just literally a piece of pegboard, painted black, set on some spacers out from the wall, got some Arlec lights from the local Bunnings shop here, so they're like LED colored lights, set them behind the Nerf gun wall, got another set them behind a bookcase. He loves to read. He's got a heap of books, linked them up to Alexa as well, so now he can talk to Alexa and turn the lights on, and he get like neon lights on the bookshelf and then neon lights on the Nerf gun wall. It looks epic. I'm going to post a video of that in just a moment as well, actually, on my Twitter. So fun home project. And I guess this is what we've been doing, right? Just trying to find things to do at home. So to sort of talk about being at home for the moment, for those not watching and just listening, I'm next to the pool and there's a giant inflatable swan in the pool because my daughter really wanted a giant inflatable swan. So yeah, we've got this sort of wonderful environment here where at least when we're stuck pretty much on this property, it's like, okay, well, there's the pool, that's great, and just behind the pool you might be able to see that there's the water, and there's a boat there which I can't go out on, unfortunately, and a jet ski under there which I can't go out on, but I can go out there and paddleboard and do all the other sorts of things which I would normally do. So isolation here is really not too bad, and it is something that I'm very conscious is a lovely way to be able to live life during this time. And I'm going to talk more about that, I think, another time. Moving on, other things that have happened this week. Paying passwords. So what I love about paying passwords is that I normally don't pay much attention to it. Like, it just sits there and it does what it needs to do. The last time I really thought about it was when we added the padding, so that if there was a man-in-the-middle style attack and they were looking at the size of the responses, they couldn't figure out which hash range had been searched for. You know, that's great. We put that out in production. A bunch of people adopt it. Job done. Move on. I looked at it the other day, and I've just passed 500 million requests in a month for the API. So it's 500 million times someone is checking to see if a password has appeared in a data breach before in order to stop people from using it again in their own systems. So I was super, super happy to see that. And I've noticed it's been ticking up massively since then as well. So when I looked at it this morning, the last day I'd done like 25 million requests in a day. So obviously if we keep at that rate, we're going to be smashing past 500 million and heading past 600 million really, really quickly. And I wonder who's using it. I don't know, because the whole thing is just freely available and there's no author or anything. But I wonder if it's at all related to the current situation where so many of us are at home, we're trying to do more things online. Are there more retailers, for example, using it because everyone's trying to buy stuff online and they're worried about account takeover attacks? Don't know. All I know is that I'm super, super happy to see that use case, or see that use sort of continue up, and I hope that there are lots of good use cases where people are doing amazing things with it. So that was cool. Another thing before I get into the couple of big stories this week, from me at least. Restaurants and ordering. I tweeted on Saturday and I said, I got a mate who runs a restaurant, and I just noticed I might have bumped my gain here on the audio. So I'm gonna knock that down a little bit. Hopefully that's not too bad. So I've got a mate who runs a restaurant. I've spoken about him a few times before. I installed that UDM at his place the other day. I have also done a full install for a Ubiquiti tutorial in his restaurant. He, like many people at the moment, are suffering and having to try and figure out how to reinvent their businesses. And like many restaurants, they're trying to take things online. Now, I was really happy about 1 week ago, almost exactly 1 week ago, it would have been a couple of hours later than this on a Friday, I tried calling up his restaurant to order some pizzas, and I couldn't get through. Time and time again, couldn't get through. And he'd just done like a flyer drop and really plugged the restaurant, and just got a massive influx of people wanting to order pizzas, which is absolutely fantastic. This helps him keep staff on and not let them go, and then sort of cascade the impact of not having income onto other people. Like, there's everything about any restaurant or business today doing well is a good thing. So I was very happy to hear that. But I was speaking to him the next day and I was like, mate, we got to get this ordering online, because you've got this bottleneck of people trying to order, and then staff tied up on phones, and then when people come and deliver the pizza, so his staff is literally delivering the pizza, because of course they're not waiting on tables at the moment. They're carrying the POS terminal around as well. So on Saturday last week, I asked the question. I said, look, has anyone got a good suggestion for taking a restaurant online in terms of menus and ordering and payment fulfillment? And my hope was that I'd get a bunch of responses, and 60% of them would all say the one thing. And it'd be like, well, that will probably be the right thing to do then. And that's not quite what happened, because I got a heap of responses, must have been hundreds of responses all up. But they were spread over everything. And I just looked at a gazillion different things. I spent hours and hours and hours. Now, eventually we've arrived at a solution which someone else is assisting with. And I won't go into any more detail than that until it's actually ready, just to make sure that it does happen and it does work the way we want it to work. But we have arrived on a platform and a technology which I think is actually a really good way of doing this. So for everyone that sort of asked what was the answer, I'm going to wait until I see the answer work, and then I'll write something up, and then I'll share it with everyone. And then if it's useful for people, I'm also going to encourage them to try and do something to help organizations like this and the people working in this industry to sustain themselves a little bit longer. So I'm going to talk about that once it's ready. So I really hope that maybe by this time next week, if not the next week, that that's going to be good to go, and I can talk about that. All right, on to other things, on to less generous things. Oh, I've been wanting to do this for a while. I get a lot of spam. And the spam sort of breaks down into a few different, very clearly defined categories. And one of those is that I get a lot of spam from, in fact, I'll go through several of the categories. So one of them is, I get a lot of spam saying, hey, we've produced an infographic. Would you like to put this infographic on your blog and promote us for free? Although they don't really say the last bit, but this is obviously what they imply. And I've always been thinking about ways to retort and mess with these organizations, because they are literally wasting my time, and it is spam. You know, I did not consent to this. This is unsolicited. It is mass marketing in order to sell a product that meets every single definition of spam. And I had harbored this pipe dream of creating an infographic which would explain where I think they should stick their infographic. And I had many, many graphic images in my mind of how I'd do that. And I have not done that yet, but I've parked that one. The other one I get a lot, of course, is the guest blog post. So, hey, we'd like to write a guest blog post for you. Now, maybe at some time I will actually go down this rabbit hole. And again, it is spam. There's no weaseling out of this just because you're like, oh, I'm just trying to make money. I don't give a shit if you're just trying to make money. It is spam. And it'd be interesting to actually follow this through. This might be the way I deal with this one. Go, okay, if you want to do this, like what's involved? How do they make money out of it? How can I waste their time, since they seem so intent on wasting everyone else's time? But the third one, which I get a lot of, and I just started saving copies of probably about a month ago, was the one where they email you and go, hey, I saw you wrote about something, and it was a good piece. I think it would benefit from linking to the piece that we have written about this. And inevitably, what they're trying to do here is get inbound links. So the more inbound links they get, the more that helps their SEO, the more people come and read their thing, and the more money they get from the ads, which they inevitably serve from their content. So again, it is spam. It is a little cold reach out saying, hey, you don't know us. You never wanted to hear from us. You never asked to hear from us. Could you please do this thing to help us monetize our services better? And that drove me nuts. So I started saving all of these messages I got. And I ended up writing this blog post. This was just on Monday. And I said, no, I won't link to your spammy article. Monday? Tuesday. If you're reading this, chances are you've arrived here from a link I sent you via email. That email would have been a reply to one you originally sent to me that would have sounded something like this. Hi, I came across your blog on Thing, and I must admit it was really nicely written. I also have an article on Thing, and I think it would be a great addition to your blog. They all sound just like this. Now, I decided that the right thing to do here, in fact, the first right thing to do is go and turn on the light, because it's going to start getting dark out here. I decided the right thing to do about this was I would start to save all these responses, and then what would happen, there it is, what would happen is I'd write this blog post, and then somewhere in the blog post, I would take the exact article, the title of the article, which they had written, I would put it in my blog post, and then I would tweet a link to that, and I would also tweet out the title of their blog post, and just to rub their noses in it, because frankly, they deserve a bit of rubbing of noses in it. I'd then send them a link to the tweet. So what I've been doing is just that. And I'll give you a little bit of a flavor of the sort of stuff that's on here. The ultimate Tor browser guide for 2020. The best VPN for China 2020. How to know if someone is watching you on your camera. Black Hat SEO. And my favorite, this is one that just came in around the time I wrote this actually. Infidelity statistics 2020. Do men or women cheat more? And the last one came because someone had found me writing about Ashley Madison, which of course was in just a totally InfoSec context. But this is how indiscriminate the spam is. They're like, oh, someone has written about Ashley Madison, therefore they should be writing or linking to our stuff around whether men or women cheat more. Like, what a heap of shit, seriously. So I've started tweeting these, and there has been much amusement. This went to number one on Hacker News the other day. Like, that's cool. I don't think I've been able to do that for a while. So I'm really, really happy to see that getting traction. So I started to tweet these. And of course, I'd reply to the original email, just so they know. The responses have been entertaining. So I started drafting a reply to one of the responses that came back to me. And then I went, no. I'm just going to sit on it. Because the first one was basically like apologetic and then saying, oh, could you please remove the reference to our article now? So, no, like that would defeat the point. How would you learn if I did that? The next one was a little bit more polite. I've only sent a few others yet, and it's a holiday period now as well, so who knows. But I'm going to keep doing this. Now, one thing that I do actually want to do, and I started dropping in content for this, is I do want to write about what constitutes spam. Now, this sounds like it should be an easy discussion, but time and time and time again, I have replies from people who say, no, this is not spam. I'll give you a really good example of this. Constantly, I'll get emails about, hey, would you like to promote our infographic? Or let me pick something that sounds a little bit less spammy. Hi, we're basically the PR manager for a security company. Here's our press release on such and such. Would you like to share this with your audience? And very often I'll just reply to these organizations and I'll say, please take me off your spam list. Like, literally, that is it, the entire sentence. Please take me off your spam list. And then I'll get emails back going, oh, it wasn't spam. It's like, yeah, it was. Like, this is literally the whole definition of it. So I think there's going to be a follow-up on this, which is going to take some of the rebuttals I get claiming it's not spam, take that, chuck it into something new, and then I'll just be throwing this back at people who send me spam. Anyway, I'm kind of curious to see where this goes. Actually, here's a really, really funny thing, and it's in the comments. Now, one other thing first, because it's the first comment. If I go into Google now and I do a search for exactly the title of the resource which the spammer has asked me to link to, I keep finding my own blog post somewhere above the fold in the search results. Result 2, 3, 4, something like that. I find that and I find my tweets. And yes, I've gone incognito. And yes, I've gone to another browser. And yes, I've gone off my Wi-Fi network and onto 4G. And yes, I've been seeing it on DuckDuckGo as well as on Google, which makes me very happy. Very, very happy. Okay, now where's this funny one? All right. Oh, let's get away with the whole thing, including the guy's name, because he did put his name on the discussed comment. Richard Curran, 3 days ago. Please send me the offending link that you found distasteful because I didn't send you an email or link. I would then like to consult a lawyer for this defamation on your part to me. Needless to say, I'm cancelling my monthly donation to you. You seem to be an educated individual. Thank you, Richard. The true senders... let me start that bit again. You seem to be an educated individual, so why not address the true senders rather than people who once admired your fight against hackers, like myself? Now, this has 15 downvotes, which should tell you something. No offense. What I think has actually happened here, and I didn't foresee this, this is unintended consequences. So what appears to have happened is... So a whole bunch of people that have signed up to my newsletter. Down the bottom of my blog, there's a link or a box you can put in your email address. I will send you an email when I blog. And it comes from MailChimp. It's clearly designated as Troy Hunt's blog. It has MailChimp footers. Click here to unsubscribe. The only way you're going to misinterpret this is you have to try really, really hard, I think, to misinterpret it. But a few people have. So a few people got the alert when I posted this, and then they got an email which says, going back to the start of this, if you're reading this, the chances are you've arrived here from a link I sent you via email. And I realized later on. And look, that wasn't the intended outcome, but I do find it kind of funny if you get upset about that. It's amazing the things that'll amuse me whilst I'm stuck at home. Anyway, so that's that. Spammy articles. I will get a lot of mileage out of this for years to come. If I get interesting responses from organizations who have been sending me spammy articles, they will go somewhere into a blog post later on, because frankly, I just have zero patience for this shit. Okay, 5G. The next topic. What could be hard about 5G? So, I have seen a marked uptick in 5G conspiracy theories recently. Actually, let me rephrase it, because that does sort of preface my own views on the discussion. I've seen a marked uptick in people being concerned of the health impact of 5G. And I have done no more than a cursory look, because my own spidey sense, when I see the messages people have been putting on Facebook and Twitter, is this is conspiracy theory. Let's just be honest, call it what it is. So I've pretty much dismissed it, but it's been gaining momentum recently, all the way up to the point where a few days ago, a friend of mine said to me, look, you know, I'm a bit worried about this 5G thing. And I'm like, oh, mate, come on, seriously, like, what are you worried about? And he sort of went on to explain, and there's a very sort of health conscious person as well, who's probably going to lean a little bit more to the side of, you know, big tech and government's trying to screw us and we need to go and find an organic solution to things, you know, so be it. But yeah, he was sort of saying, oh, there's just, you know, have there been studies done? And like, I assume so. Like, they're literally rolling it out all over the world. I don't know. I'm really not up to the studies of electromagnetic radiation within the next generation of wireless networks. It's like I pull out my phone and it works. And I assume that the governments and the regulators and everyone else have done the necessary studies. And I don't want to get into the discussion about whether they have or whether they haven't, because that's really not the point of this blog post. He sort of went on and said, you know, there's a lot of 5G towers in Wuhan where the coronavirus came from. And I'm just going, oh my God. All right, gonna go down this rabbit hole. So I asked the question on Twitter the other day. I said, I've seen a big uptick in people petitioning 5G rollout recently. These are normal everyday folks, not scientists. What's driving their fear? Just the social media echo chamber, or is there any scientific basis for concern whatsoever? I included a screen cap that I had seen a friend use. And in fact, this is a screen cap of a petition on change.org. I do not consent to 5G. Hashtag stop 5G. Say no to 5G. And this is a friend, in fact, is a friend of my parents. Different to another friend of my parents I'll talk about later on, who, so she'd be late 60s, to the fullest extent of my knowledge, not a scientist or having ever done anything like this, but is the type of person who tends to jump on these bandwagons. Now, the change.org screen cap I've got here as well, under the change.org title, includes the warning. Change.org has received flags from our users that the statements in this petition may be contested. You should consider researching this issue before signing or sharing. And this begins the heart of my issue. When I started thinking about this, I thought, what is an interesting angle on this? Because I don't want to have a discussion about whether 5G is harmful or not, whether it causes coronavirus or not, no matter how crazy I think that is. I am not equipped to do that. I work in a field which is sciencey, but I know absolutely nothing about radiation. I just assume that the other people who allow this stuff to be legally passed do. And now there's going to be people who say, yeah, well, I'm, yeah. Anyway, point being is that that's not my area of expertise. What I do know about is hoaxes and disinformation campaigns. And time and time and time again, we see information spread by social media that gets huge amounts of traction very quickly, which is absolutely patently batshit crazy bullshit ridiculous. I am passionate about this. And I start off this blog post with a tweet of mine from only a week and a half ago. Now, this is a tweet that has a screen cap of a Facebook post about house parties. So remember, house party was in the news a lot because people were having their accounts taken over. As best I can tell, it looked like credential stuffing. They reckon it's a smear campaign. Regardless, there's press murmurs, rumors about house party. So someone here says, delete house party app, all caps. Anybody that has it, Simon's just on a big call now with work and it's hacking everybody's phones, 2! Online banking and all sorts, about 7 or 8! followed by a pipe. I don't know why you put a pipe at the end of all the exclamation marks. Copied this X. Anyway, so I tweeted this and I said, as a general rule of thumb, anything on Facebook expressed in all caps, accompanied by many exclamation points and encouraging other people to do something is outright bullshit. That got a lot of likes. So I wanted to talk about the patterns that we see which indicate that content is potentially a hoax or disinformation. Not talk about 5G itself or whether it causes coronavirus and that sort of stuff. Let's just talk about the patterns and how we are all able to better filter this stuff out and how we should filter this stuff out before we share it. So, got a few headings here. I've said it takes minutes to establish, and then in brackets, lack of credibility. It is really, really easy to figure out whether a lot of this stuff is legit or not. Now, I embed an example here, which was the parent of one of my friend's mates at school on a WhatsApp group talking about Dance of the Pope. Now, you may not have heard of Dance of the Pope, but according to this person who prefaced the message with from a friend, if you know anyone using WhatsApp, you might pass this on. An IT colleague of mine has advised that a video comes out tomorrow from WhatsApp called Martinelli. Do not open it. It hacks your phone and nothing will fix it. Spread the word if you receive a message. I just had a sudden temptation to start spamming people with messages called Martinelli. I'm at home and I'm bored. Anyway, it hacks your phone and nothing will fix it. Spread the word. So notice that, spread the word, right? Encouraging redistribution. If you receive a message to update the WhatsApp to, it literally says a message to update the WhatsApp, no capital A either, to WhatsApp Gold, do not click, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5! Please inform all contacts, again, encouraging the spread. From your list, do not open a video called The Dance of the Pope. It is a virus that formats your mobile. Beware, it is very dangerous. They announced it today on BBC Radio. Forward this message to as many people as you can. That's the third instance of trying to encourage other people to redistribute the same disinformation. Now, someone sent this. It took me less than 60 seconds to Google Dance of the Pope virus to find multiple results referring to it as a hoax or a scam, to jump back into WhatsApp, put in the message and say, this is a hoax or a scam. Here's a link to the thing that explains it. That didn't stop other parents scrolling past that and then commenting along the lines of thank you very much. And here we are. So this is the point. It's very, very easy to quickly validate a lot of this stuff. Now it's also very, very easy to start looking at how well qualified the people making these comments and sharing this information are to actually have a view on the subject. The parent that sent this, as far as I know, knows absolutely nothing about InfoSec. Doesn't stop him from picking it up and redistributing it. When I go and look at some of these petitions, I'm looking at one here on change.org. I love the title of this one. I can't even do it with a straight face. Stop 5G networks now. We do not want a weapon system nor our brains to be fried. Serious stuff. Also, has the same warning on the top of it from change.org about people contesting the facts. This was posted by a lady called Jen Oates from Parkerville, Western Australia. Not sure where Parkerville is in Western Australia, but there's not a whole lot of anything in Western Australia. She has, in her profile photo, a picture of a crop circle. Now, of course, crop circles are very, very closely related to conspiracy theories. And then you look at the comments on this as well. Like, there's this guy here who is just a massive big rant that ends up saying something like, his words were, evil devil worshipping money counting Judas Satanist. like basically blaming people rolling out 5G using that description. So anyway, I've made a point here. In fact, I made a bunch of insights. He said, look, you can also tell a lot about the credibility of a claim by observing those attracted to it. And look, I'm not going to read the whole thing here because it is a little bit of a wordy one, but I've got a piece in here that's like, okay, there's Woody Harrelson promoting this story that 5G and coronavirus have a link. Not necessarily that 5G is spreading coronavirus. Imagine that if you could actually get it over the radio wave. But that 5G effectively impacts the immune system. And as a result of that, you're more likely to get coronavirus. Anyway, I just never pick Woody Harrelson as being an authoritative voice on the subject. You know, and inevitably he worked out later on that maybe he wasn't either because he deleted this particular Instagram post. But the point is that just use your freaking brain. Like if you see Woody Harrelson talking about something really scientific, it's like, are you really going to listen to like the Zombie Tap guy, our Zombieland guy, Zombieland Double Tap guy, and then say, yeah, like this is the bloke I want to listen to and take scientific advice from. Now, I've also made a point here about confirmation bias, and this is really, really interesting. So this is another heading here, and I've sort of explained that confirmation bias is our own innate tendency to seek out information that reinforces our own belief on something. And we all have it. I have it as well. I would be very happy to seek out information to show that a lot of this 5G stuff is just conspiracy theories. That would be my confirmation bias. And the trick is to understand that when you're attracted to something, is it because it's your own confirmation bias, or have you reached this via some evidence-based conclusion? So when it comes to something like the 5G situation, a lot of people, when you look at their profiles, are well and truly, and this is the profiles people supporting it, are well and truly into the conspiracy theory camp. So they obviously have a confirmation bias, which would predicate them to wanting to believe that 5G is somehow some government campaign to spread the coronavirus or get into all their brains or whatever it is that they believe. So being just conscious of that, am I trying to find something negative about this? And I think this mate of mine who raised it the other day, he does feel like a lot of what comes from government is probably not in our own best interest. That's the most charitable way I can put it. There's another heading here. Occam's razor usually provides the answer. Now, Occam's razor simply states that the simplest solution is most likely to be the correct one. So when you're faced with alternate theories of how something might have happened, five different ways something might have happened, it's like, let's take the simplest one. That is probably what it is. So when you look at this, and oh my God, I've just embedded the tweet from someone here, Kimberly. She says, it's not coronavirus, it's called cell death from 5G radiation. And then she's got all of these timelines here. Now let's go back to 1918. She's quite the historian, Kimberly. She says, the introduction of radio waves caused the Spanish flu of 1918. 1G launched influenza 1979, 2G launched cholera 1991, 3G launched influenza 98, 4G launched H1N1 2009, 5G launched COVID-19 2019. Every time the world gets an upgrade on its own electromagnetic field, it messes people, and then I can't read the bottom of the tweet, messes people breathing up clearly. This doesn't even make sense, Kimberly. Every time the world gets in an upgrade to its electromagnetic field, it messes people breathing up clearly. So, point here, applying Occam's razor to this, let's talk about the correlation of the 5G situation or the 5G uptake in places like Wuhan and, of course, the emergence of the coronavirus. Occam's razor is the simplest answer is most likely to be the correct one. Wuhan's got about 11 million people in it. It's in China. It's a very tech-centric place. It is very likely to have 5G much, much earlier than many other places. Of course, remember that Huawei, the Chinese provider, is a manufacturer of a lot of equipment that goes into 5G networks around the world. Another great big debate about that. So yeah, we're going to see a big Chinese city adopting 5G pretty quickly. Also, someone caught a virus there. Now, this is correlation. It's not causation. Someone sent me a great tweet on this, actually. Because I was explaining this to my mate the other day. I was like, you know how many funny graphs there are on correlation versus causation? And there's one here, which is the number of people drowned by falling into a pool on one line, and then next to that, films Nicolas Cage appeared in, and the lines are really close. It's like, Well, do you think every time Nicolas Cage does a film, someone falls into a pool and drowns? No, because there's a difference here. This is the whole cause and effect discussion. So, I've got an insight here. When faced with alternate theories, consider which one is the simplest and therefore most likely to be true. And part of this as well is that people are getting so bent out of shape about 5G, they've literally been burning down cell towers in the UK. And I've got an embedded video here from, I believe it's a minister here somewhere in the UK Parliament, as it was live from Downing Street, per the headline here, who's saying, could you please stop burning down the cell towers? Our emergency response vehicles actually need this in order to go to people and save their lives. Like, this is just so bizarre. Now, I've got another point here. The viral nature of hoaxes is a warning sign. And this is what I kind of touched on before with the Dance of the Pope thing. Three different times where someone is trying to encourage information to be shared. And what I'd really, really love people to think about here is when they see a message which has anything in it designed to promote the redistribution of it, why is that there? I almost sound like a conspiracy theorist now, except I'm right about stuff like Dance of the Pope because we know it was fake. And of course, the answer is it's there to try and propagate the disinformation. Now, entirely coincidentally, yesterday morning, I got a Facebook message from another friend of my mother's, a school friend of my mother's, so she'd be the same age as my mum, which would put her in her early 70s, and she sent me the Dance of the Pope. Again, and I just got it, and I'm like, oh, come on, for God's sake. Like, I'm trying to write this blog post now, and you've just gone and sent me the thing which just completely reinforces the message. And I actually messaged her back and said, look, hey, whoa, is this you? Because this is completely wrong. Has someone hacked your account or something like this? And she said, no, look, it was her. And I actually said to her, now that you know it's, because I told her it was a hoax, so now that you know it's a hoax, how do you feel about it? And she's written me a great big paragraph here, which I've screen capped without her name, obviously, and put it in the blog post. The key sentence though is this one. She says, in my case, and I think with many others, when you know that you lack knowledge and experience in this field, and that you don't know enough to call it most definitely a scam, and that you feel it's arrogant to make a choice on other people's behalf, you err on side of caution and post it on. So she's saying she doesn't know enough about it, so she's going to be cautious and rebroadcast that, which of course, as we've already seen, encourages other people to then rebroadcast it, and the whole thing propagates over and over and over again. Now, somewhere in here as well, she said she now feels quite silly for having done that. And frankly, I think that that's right. You should feel quite silly for redistributing this stuff. But I guess the point I'm trying to make here is that this stuff is designed to be viral in nature and propagate. And kind of rounding out the whole discussion about 5G, COVID-19, all the rest of it. The thing to keep in mind, regardless of whether 5G causes cancer or molecular cell destruction or whatever it is, I honestly haven't even read that much into it because all the references around it seem so batshit crazy. The problem is that when it has all the hallmarks of scam, hoax, disinformation, it's very, very hard to take seriously. And the point I'm trying to make here is I really want people just to stop sharing this shit. Like, we've had so much trouble with this, especially since 2016 and elections and things like this. Another rabbit hole we're not going to go down. But we've really got to do a better job at disseminating what is information worth redistributing and opinions worth effectively putting in front of other people. And when should you perhaps just take a step back and go, maybe this isn't legit. Maybe I need to learn a bit more. Maybe I need to actually understand this and establish an informed opinion and then share it. Of course, it's not going to happen, but I would love it if we could actually get to that point. And that was the entire bit around 5G. And that's how I blew my entire day yesterday writing this blog post when I expected to be doing other things. So, all of that said, I've gone very long. And I knew it was going to be long today because there was a lot of stuff. So I've got to get on a sponsor. Sponsor this week is Duo Security. So Duo is back again. They've been on my blog before, going beyond the perimeter. What about a zero trust approach to security and how you get started? So they've got a free guide which you can go and download here. Zero trust is the buzzword today and for very good reason. And I greatly appreciate Duo being there sponsoring me again for this week from Poolside. So look, anyway, I know there's a bunch of stuff this week. I hope it was useful. I don't know where you all are, what you're doing. You've probably got heaps of time on your hands. So, you know, maybe this was a good time killer. And hopefully next week I'll actually have a finished network that I can then talk about. Thanks for watching.